Welcome to Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. Up to now, there's been about 300. I've produced about 300 podcasts, and the podcast will still be going out. So this will be available as a podcast, available as a transcript, and now as a YouTube. Now, what's going on? Well, I've been training. Well, initially at YouTube, it's taken too long to produce. And then as part of my cardiac rehab, which I'll go into, I've had to increase the ability to speak directly and succinctly without pausing and arrange ideas. And that's gradually progressed as I've worked out how to publish podcasts, schedule them, and get a series going forward. But as I've encountered areas that I want to explain which require diagrams, I'll eventually have to move on onto YouTube. And actually develop the general confidence going forward. So what are some of these issues that I have to talk about, a bit more complex? And this is something called magnetic resonance imaging, MRI. So you will have probably had it for something. I've had a few, one MRI of my brain, in actual fact, and it's a special time of flight one, that is the blood rushes into an area and it's not yet been magnetized, it's fresh blood, and so therefore it shows up very brightly to see blood flow in my brain. I'll get onto that a bit more, but there's sufficiently advanced physics in the MRI that when you're teaching it or correcting it in an HSC exam, you think, these people are really rote learning things like the Lamour frequency, rotation, precession frequency, and all things to do with MRI. So without further ado, I'll get into the actual MRI idea. So as you would know, MRI relies on having a very large 0.5 to 2 Tesla field. You can get even stronger fields than that. And this requires a very large magnet. You put your head in a huge solenoid. It's quite safe. You can't actually have anything metal in you when you go into it. They have to make sure that if they implant anything to you that it's not magnetic. So that's now that we have MRIs, we are very careful to make sure that we don't put things, metal things into you. I remember visiting some superconducting magnets, I think in Bonn, Germany, and I said, look, I didn't have anything magnetic, so I did have something magnetic in my pocket and just began to pull out. And so you put yourself in a strong magnetic field, that's an axial magnetic field, so which is parallel to your spine going in. You put your head or arm or leg or even body into the MRI machine to operate, and it operates on by aligning nuclear spin. So there are certain things that I think a phosphorus is a particular one, obviously hydrogen, anything with an odd number of protons and neutrons, and they're set up in a particular way. So you can have some very high nuclear spins of 3.5. The nuclear spins are plus or minus a half, and this is where we have to talk about an atom. I think we can use the Bohr atom. There's no problem in doing that, even though it's largely incorrect. In the Bohr atom, you have a small nucleus in the center where the charges, the protons and neutrons in that, and that's the nucleus which will spin, and then you have the electrons on the outside. In the Bohr model, they're mostly empty space, and quantum mechanics, it's all filled space. The electron actually fills the space, so that's a difference that we come across across them. So we have the nucleus, and we have a concept of these very tiny protons and neutrons, extremely small. Now, in classical mechanics or the Bohr model, these are hard surfaces. In quantum mechanics, there's no such thing as a surface, so these just keep coming in and out of existence, and they technically don't spin. So let's talk a little bit about what spin is. So spin is a quantum mechanical property of a nucleus, of everything in every particle. Electrons, protons and neutrons all have spin. Just switch on the light here for it. I've just been limited by the side of my computer screen. One of the things I will do in future is improve the actual lighting and production and eventually get a pad so I can actually write and it will appear in front of you. So let's get back to it. Yeah, this is a spin. Spin is not a concept. A spin is a word that they've used to describe something, and it's so happened that it's related very much to physical spinning tops and things like that, but it doesn't necessarily mean that that's the spin concept that we do have. In fact, the universe or all things have something called an S2 symmetry. So please look that up in the internet. This is an S2 symmetry. It actually means that if you rotate something like this, for instance, pick this up, which used to hold the camera before I moved it, and I will improve things. The thing is that normally in our space, if you rotate something once, that's 360 degrees, it's actually got 720 degrees rotation. So you have to actually rotate it a second time to get back. The only mathematical thing which we have, which I can hold and show you, I don't have here, is a Mobius strip. And that has something which has got S2 symmetry. You have to actually run your finger twice before you get back to the original place. And so that actually has a spin, but a rotation in space. It can be either clockwise or anti-clockwise in space. And most things are spin forbidden. So you can't actually rotate the actual spin of the proton. You can re, or in that you can actually reorient it, or I suppose flip the spin in the magnetic field. It can either be plus or minus, and this spin has got a unit of angular momentum. So let's the it's got a unit of momentum of h bar, I think, when you go across it, and h is Planck's constant. And it's pretty interesting because Planck's constant is used to calculate energy. It's units of joule seconds. So joule second is both as a joule second, it's very much the unit of something called in physics action. And therefore, if we multiply it by time, we'll get energy. So you get h mu h by not by time, but inverse time. So it's joule second. And if we multiply it by frequency, we'll get energy if we get into it. But left alone by itself as a unit, it's also a unit of angular momentum. Or momentum, if you want to put it that way. And how it's at the unit of momentum is that a joule second, Planck's constant, we're getting into what spin is. A joule second is a newton meters per second per second, a kilogram put in accelerated 1 meters per second is a joule. And so it's a kilogram meters per second per second times a second, so that's a kilogram times the velocity, which gives you a momentum. So a Planck's constant is a unit of momentum, and indeed, the spinning, the rotation of the emission of light is involves the is quantized. Light is quantized. It's got plus or minus momentum. It's got variable energy, and it can be polarized one way or the other, having transferring different momentum spaces, flipping it. This is, I suppose, trying to get into it. So, due to it's where does spin come from? I'll just quickly go on that. So, if you actually look back into the original, I think Dirac found them, where he co-discovered when he looked at trying to mix special relativity into quantum mechanics. He came up with the four tensor, or the four coordinates of space, x, y, z, and time. And when he played with that, he produced a four-rank tensor, which had matter, antimatter, spin up, spin down. So it's really bound into the actual nature of space, the symmetry, the fact that we are rotation sensitive. So there's no absolute velocity, but there is an absolute rotation, and that's gone into the actual development of spin. So hopefully I've got up on that. I don't know how complicated this is going to be. So you have a proton with a spin, and that proton will, or it's always aligned to a local magnetic field. So whatever the magnetic field is, it is by definition aligned to it, but you make the a really strong magnetic field and it has to be aligned to it, and it will orbit the magnetic field by the Longomere, I can't pronounce it, I can read it, but I very rarely speak to people about rotation frequency. So this will process like a top with a weight on it, and gravity will process around the circle. If you spin a top, it will spin very quickly but process, and oh, there's a bit of physics in how precession, but the rate of precession is this frequency. And if you get the magnetic field strong enough out, you can increase the frequency. So the problem is a low magnetic field is a low frequency and possibly low, but if you can get high enough up, you can get the frequency up to the radio waves. And if it's radio waves, you can actually use the radio waves to actually locate something down to the wavelengths of radio waves. So that's why you use it. So if you use a lower magnetic field, you have to use a lower frequency, and there's a whole series of things. You lose your MRI becomes blurry. So the strong magnetic field is related to the precision of it and the frequency that you use. And so the entire thing is that your proton, which is not like this. There's no surface to it. It actually starts and finishes in space. That's quantum mechanics. So your proton is rotating like this, and you can induce a magnetic field to it, radio field to it, and it will rotate like that. And so you can have protons at a low energy state and a high energy state. And it's something you'll probably have to make. No matter how hard you hit these states like this, part of the Einstein's equations, the stimulated emission and absorption equation. Absorption is hitting it like this, and it will go to that state. And stimulated emission, the same light will actually flick it up there. So if you hit it really hard, what will happen is that you, at the hardest you hit it, it's not, they're not all going to go like that, because the same radiation which hits it to go between those two energy levels, and again, I haven't really described what energy levels, will do the opposite like that. And this is something which is missing in all the descriptions that I have seen. No one points out that the fact that at saturation you have 50% like this and 50% like that of the proton spins going around. If you're going to look at proton spins and you've got the magnetic field and the frequency just right, so the magnetic field will mean, if you set a magnetic field, there's a natural frequency of those protons going around like this, and if you tune the radio waves precisely, you can actually just tune in on that one. If you have a gradient, you've got a gradient of things spinning at each frequency, and by sweeping the frequency and the field gradients, you can actually track down and work out what's going in, actually slice through. The Einstein equations, they're three equations. One is for, or two equations. One's for spontaneous emission. This is a light bulb, and this is where the actual state itself has the electric field built in, ready to come out. Or there's absorption, stimulated emission. So absorption goes like that, and absorption can only go up to a saturated point when any more absorption goes as stimulated emission up. And so the harder you hit something, its maximum is at 50%. So this is a really important thing, and I hope I can describe what's going on. So you hit it really hard, and you will have 10 like this and 10 like that. and all spinning around, and what will happen is that you will initially, when you hit it, get a hit it really hard. This is the entire thing. You can't stimulate it and measure it at the same time. If you try and measure it while you are pumping it through, so the signal from a tiny piece of your body is not going to be anywhere near the signal going in to build it. So your initial signal will be enormously strong and will swamp any signal from you coming out. So there's the radio wave which pumps out is the same transmission antenna is the receiving antenna, so it can't transmit and receive at the same time. So that's an important thing. So while the radio wave's on, it's not working at all. And so the important thing is that you can get 50% this way and 50% that way. I should say, with a powerful laser beam into any liquid, you can actually pack up the power so much that it will actually go through, stop absorbing, and actually go out through the other side, because absorption can only go so much before it gets stimulated emission back. Okay, this is an important thing. So you've got your first pulse, which is, I've forgotten it, there's T exciting, I think it is. T repetition, it is, that's right, T repetition. So T repetition is, you do this experiment and you want to keep on doing it. And then the, you've got that the length of that, and then your echo setting fault. So you've got TR, which is your repeating fault. So that's how many times a second do you actually stabilize it. Now what happens is that if I have 50% like that and 50% like that, and I organize it such that it is like that, it will actually produce a net vector, one up like that way and one like that way in that direction, and it will start to, as a net vector, if everything's synchronized and put together, will start to orbit like that. This is not an actual vector, this is the net vector, and so that net vector will appear to, over time, as things naturally relax to the top state, will appear to go like that. But this is not a real spin. So people think somehow that the MRA field can actually spin, break the laws of quantum mechanics, and actually move the spin down to zero. But really, the spin, depending on its precessor axis, is, say, 80 degrees and minus 80 degrees. But somehow they think that the field can actually break quantum mechanics and bring it to zero. It doesn't break it. It actually just puts some minus 80 degrees in, and so the average, if you could blur it, average it's like that, it actually goes like this. And you can't measure it like this. You've just turned on the field, there's just noise around the place going around, and it's not as interesting. And so what happens is that it goes around like this. I can't quite do it. There's it goes around, and different ones, they begin to spread out, going at different speeds. And so this one disappears. It spins around, but then eventually 50% get out of phase, and it quickly disappears into a whole blur. But there's a recipe for how it's done. And so they do the next pulse, the echo pulse. So what's happened here is I have... and it's the most incredible piece of physics. So the first pulse is actually put 50% like that, and then it's spinning around like this, and it's spreading out. And then what happens is it's all spread out, and it's traveling at different speeds. And then what happens is the echo pulse lifts it up and turns it around 180 degrees. And so what happens is that time reverses the spreading of this pulse, and so what will happen is a time afterwards equal to the time that you space at the time afterwards, because The time between your repetition pulse and your echo pulse is the time it's had to spread out. And then when you flip it back over, it's flipped out, and what will happen is it will keep these vectors. I don't understand why people don't explain it like this. These vectors will rotate, they're spread out, they're rotated, so the fast one is now put behind, and the slow one is now put in front. The slow one won't go as fast as it goes around, and the slow one will go faster, and the fast one will go slow because they've been put. They've been time reversed, and so what happens is that they will then catch up again, because the stuff that has spread them has been time reversed, or their positions have been, the fact that they've gone behind, the ones that slowed up has been put ahead. So imagine you've got several of them, you're running at the race. Now, this is a way of saying you're running at a race, and you've got the say the slow kid who's got a sore leg, and you've got a moderate runner, and you've got the fast athlete. What you do is you say at a particular point in time you photograph them, freeze them, and what you do is you put the fast kid in the position of the slow kid, and fast kid in the position of the slow kid in the position of the fast kid, and the middle person at the same rate. And then what happens is you set them off again. Of course, the fast kid is going to eventually catch up with the slow and with the medium kid. At the same time, the slow kid's going to slow down. And what you'll see is this flash in time along the race where everyone is equal again. And that is, when they're equal again, you suddenly have this vector which wasn't there before appear and will start to rotate. So this fabulous thing, it's the most incredible thing. You have initial pulse, which creates them all off. They all race, and then you have another pulse, which flips them over 180 degrees, sets the slow one in the fast in the ahead, and the fast one behind, and then you let them run, continue around under the same perturbation, and they will magically reappear. And so this is, the signals are off, and you suddenly listen to it, and you hear this minute like this, and there will be two oscillations with two different things. There'll be the T1, which is growing, because what's happening is that you'll start to lose the bottom one, and you are always losing it, and that T1 will grow bigger and bigger and bigger from the time you see it. And in that brief echo time before the deco here, you can see it begin to go, and you can actually see it regrow. And then you can have an antenna to look at the intensity in T1, that's T1. And then you also have another one which looks at the length of the length in this side, and that will start to degrade, and you have a T1, T2 along the direction and in the XY plane, and watch it go ahead. And so this gives you a fantastic insight into it. I'll have to go in and talk more about the different types of MRI. There's that which tells you the actual condition of the component, so it tells you the actual whether it's fat or water, depends which is brighter or darker in terms of which has a strong decay rate and a slow decay rate. There's another thing which tells you the proton density. I'll have to really, really think about how you do the proton density. There's a whole lot of other things. There's functional MRI. Functional MRI is quite interesting because I'm not quite sure that you can do functional MRI with hydrogen. I've heard them done with other elements, and this is where these objects or places you can. But the thing that I've done in my head is that you've saturated it, and what happens, you've got a saturated zone, and then what happens, fresh blood comes in that hasn't been saturated, and so that shows up, that's got a strong signal. So you can see the fresh blood go inside your brain. There's, so you've got the functional You've got that. You've also got the ability, which I think is rather good, is to actually measure the temperature and the orientation, and then use destructive ultrasound. So you can use ultrasound, a large ultrasound array, focusing in. So it's, you know, a few watts here and here, and it's all focusing down into a tiny, tiny little point. So you can actually cook a point and actually watch your ultrasound cooking in live time. It's a fantastic thing. There seems several barriers. One is the barrier of understanding spin, which is a fundamental thing to universes. We have two spin up and spin down universe overimposed ourselves, and the spin of subatomic particles. Subatomic particles, electrons. They're not spin as we understand. In fact, the spin actually adds on to traditional spin that we tend to understand of angular momentum. I just have to think. So there's the misunderstanding about spin. There's a misunderstanding about, in terms of, we talk, it's going to be either this or that. The Langmuir, I think the Langmuir's frequency is a better way of pronouncing it. We can explain that, but for some reason we skip the point about, we say it's got to be this or that, but here's the spin going around on the plane. And of course that's a statistical averaged vector. And the fact that it's statistically averaged is that once we make it, it then lasts a very short while before it decoheres, it spreads out, and then we can do this flip up of rearranging it to race together, and it will actually sweep back together. And as it sweeps back together for that period of time, everything's off, you'll hear this tiny, or pick up this tiny field, which goes back and gets analyzed by a computer. And then we have the decay time of this direction and side direction as it comes up, giving you T1, T1 and T2. And I just have to, you can weight it such that you measure more T1, or you can weight it and measure T2. I think if you weigh it pretty evenly, you'll get the proton density, but then there are many different tricks that you can use to turn MRI into this most amazing tool we used to try and get across. I'll just finish off in that I was in lectures at university when they had proposing using the first MRI machines, and we looked at it and thought, you know, who is going to afford to have a magnet that strong and that powerful? How can it possibly happen? And I remember my lecturer afterwards saying, don't worry, there will only be ever two or three of these machines on the planet. And none of them will be in Australia. And now they're in every suburb, at least in Sydney. They're out there. Perhaps 30,000 more right across the planet. It's pretty amazing, and it's pretty amazing the technology that they can do. And people just don't question what can be done. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I am actually trying this YouTube format, and as part of my cardiac rehab, I've decided to focus on my rehab, be able to discuss and talk very quickly to camera, such that I can get sufficient practice out without having to re-edit it. But this is one step along the way, one step in which I'll eventually get, probably in the next couple of days, the board, so I can write as I'm doing it. And people who have been with me for a long time will see how I have rehabilitated bit by bit, in terms of breathing, being able to actually talk after the operation, but also cognitively. People will have noted that I'm beginning to speak faster and be able to access far more knowledge. Thanks for listening. In the meantime, keep on thinking, doing, and teaching science.